Welcome to Integrative Conversations, hosted by the Academy of Integrative Mental Health. The Academy expands knowledge to professionals in the mental health community and beyond, using a conscious, experiential, and evidence-based format. Our mission is to deliver comprehensive health and wellness to all by empowering personal and professional growth and confidence. To learn more, visit us at www.academyimh.com. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hello, I'm Juniper Owens, the co-founder and director of the Academy of Integrative Mental Health, and also your host for today's Integrative Conversation. And I am very excited to share today's conversation with you that I had with Erica Reavy, who is the CEO of Therapists Need Therapy Too. In this conversation, she discusses the importance of showing up for yourself as a therapist, problems facing the mental health system today, as well as barriers facing mental health professionals in seeking their own care. Talking about showing up for yourself as a mental health professional is a fundamental component in not only our personal health and wellness, but the sustainability of this career. There are so many factors outside of our control, such as systemic and cultural racism and oppression, that shape the organizations, agencies, and clients we work with, as well as the very foundation, research, and theories many of us have been taught and use in our formal education programs. Insurance continues to be an issue. Accessibility of services, generational trauma, poverty, climate change, and all the environmental influences that we interact with on a daily basis. Additionally, mental health professionals have been and will continue to support community members who are struggling at alarming rates. In fact, during late June, the CDC reported that of the sample they polled, 40% of U.S. adults reported struggling with mental health or substance abuse and suicidal ideation. That is almost half of all Americans. And the numbers were significantly higher among young adults aged 18 to 24, as well as racial and ethnic minority groups and essential workers. Here is a clip of Angela Davis talking about the importance of self-care, or even radical self-care.
Anyone who's interested in making change in the world also has to learn how to take care of herself, himself, theirselves. For a long time, activists did not necessarily think that it mattered to take care of themselves in terms of what they eat, in terms of mental self-care, corporal self-care, spiritual self-care. I know that there were some people who emphasized it. I'm thinking about one of the leaders of the Black Panther Party, Erica Huggins, who began to practice yoga and meditation in the 70s. And she encouraged many people, including Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, to join that practice. I think they did a little bit of it. But I think our movement would have been very different had we understood the importance of that kind of self-care. Personally, I started practicing yoga and meditation when I was in jail, but it was more of an individual practice. Later, I had to recognize the importance of emphasizing the collective character of that work.
Mental health professionals are essential workers. Our mental and physical health is a priority amidst the rising demand for services. We want to support you during this time. Please let us know how. One way, you can check out our free self-care crash course that offers a guided practice every day for 6 days. If that's something that resonates for you, if you could use the extra support of a guided practice. You can sign up on www.academyimh.com. You can also send us a contact form on our website, and we can connect you to our Mighty Network, a private group platform for mental health professionals interested in integrative, inclusive, and non-mainstream approaches. We have a community just for our podcast listeners, Integrative Conversations. And without further ado, let's get on to our conversation with Erica Reavy. Erica Reavy is a licensed clinical social worker in the states of Kentucky and Ohio. She graduated from Berea College with a bachelor's in women's studies, from University of Louisville with a master's in social work, and Bellarmine University with a master's in spirituality and religion. As the CEO and founder of Therapists Need Therapy Too, Erica focuses primarily on being the therapist for therapists and their immediate family members. Erica is also the CEO and founder of Forward Solutions Counseling and Consulting, where she works closely with students, families, and teachers to bridge the gap between mental health and educational barriers. Additionally, as one of the co-founders of the Black Counseling and Consulting Collective nonprofit organization, Erica dedicates her time in the community by promoting the advancement of mental health and quality of care within the Black community. Also serving as an adjunct faculty member at the University of Louisville, Erica continues her commitment to education, teaching courses on but not limited to research and social work practice. Erica is a loving mother and wife whose favorite form of self-care is through traveling and seeing the world when she is not serving the community. Passionate about meeting people where they are, Erica vows to help them overcome past and current traumas. She believes that in order to heal, we must all do the work. Erica, welcome to Integrative Conversations. We're so excited to have you with us for this conversation today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I want to dive right in because the work that you do is so needed and interesting, and it seems like a niche within our field. And I'm just really curious of what led you to doing this work that you are today, and also in your passion for advocating for the well-being of mental health professionals.
So what led me to this work is actually more of a personal journey that turned into a professional journey. A few years ago, I was going through some personal things, and I was just feeling really, I was just burnt out. I had come to this crossroad where I felt like I no longer wanted to do this work. And at that time, I was seeing my own therapist, but I felt like something was missing. I still wasn't getting what I needed in order to get over that burnout hump. And so what started as a conversation with a friend turned into a business. And because at that time I realized there's nothing for us as providers out there. Like, there's no space just for us. And yes, other therapists see us, but there's nowhere where we can go and talk to or be around people who genuinely understand what we're going through. And so through that, Therapists Need Therapy Too was born. And basically, just that idea that there is a space that other therapists can come, whether it's for individual therapy, consulting services, group therapy, and not just them, their immediate family members. Because that was another thing I ran into, is needing services for my own family members. And my son needed therapy 1 year, and it was so difficult to find a provider that I didn't know or that I didn't know of or who didn't, you know. And so for me, Therapists Need Therapy Too is about creating an exclusive space for us as providers to feel comfortable, to feel safe, and to feel relatable.
Yes. And so this idea and passion was born out of a need in the community that you noticed, especially for a space for providers. And when you say a space for providers, what does that mean? And what does that look like in TNT2?
So it looks like a little bit of everything. It looks like individual therapy. it looks, and you know, having a space where you can come and you're not afraid that you're going to see your own clients in the waiting area, because that's the thing. We are exclusive to providers. And I will say recently, since COVID, we've expanded a little bit to meet the needs of the community. And so we've expanded to other helping professions. But again, to be a space where when you walk in, you're not thinking like, oh, I may run into a client here. Oh, I may run into someone who knows me personally, because in the space that I've created, the goal is for it to be exclusively for therapists. And so, again, individual, group as well. So I do, we do group therapy. Prior to COVID, those group therapy sessions were on a weekly basis in person. And so, of course, since COVID has started, we kind of just day by day and try to meet people where they are, because right now this is a struggle for everyone. However, we've done some online group therapy sessions. And again, in those sessions, it's only therapists, only licensed clinical providers. So you know that when you log in, no one else, they're not going to run into people who aren't in the same field as you. So that's what I say when I say a safe environment, where we also, we've hosted some luncheon listens. And so not as formal as group therapy, where we come out and we just kind of talk about things, really more of a processing. And so just to, again, been in a space where other therapists are, and sometimes it's just social, you know, also meeting the social need, because that's a big part of this work is, you know, I was having a conversation with someone one day about feeling like I can't just go out and have a glass of wine in public sometimes, because then I'm worried about like, is someone going to see me? Am I going to run into a client? And so our goal is to try to create that space where you can come in, you know, and again, COVID happened, but we had so many awesome things planned this year. You know, we intended on doing like a paint and sip, where again, just therapists in the area, in the space, painting, sipping, you know, just having a good social time.
Yes. And I think that one of the barriers that I heard you mention are, what if I see a client? And also that you include and extend to family members in this space. It is interesting, because I noticed the same thing when I was looking for therapy for my son. Was like, not that I'm embarrassed or ashamed, I really wanted confidentiality and like to not have to see them. And also they know everything about my son's life. That was uncomfortable. Is that kind of what you noticed? And also, what are some of the other barriers that therapists run into that you've seen in getting their own treatment?
So definitely the idea that it's not necessarily that you're embarrassed, but it's that you know a lot of these people and you're in the same spaces with you. And so, you know, I don't want to be sitting in a staffing with you or a meeting about another client or patient, and I know that you know all the business that's going on in my household, you know. And it's just, I mean, nobody wants that. That confidentiality goes a long way for everyone. You know, we stress that for our clients. And so I think a big part of this is, often we forget that therapists are people, and the same emotions that our clients are feeling about wanting confidentiality, about wanting to feel safe and secure, we want that same thing. However, it's difficult to get that, especially in Louisville. You know, we like to say that Louisville's a big city, but it's really a small city, relatively speaking. And if you don't know someone, you know someone that knows someone. And so knowing that, it's really hard and difficult to be in those spaces and to seek services. I think I literally called around to 3 or 4 different agencies before I finally, and what we ended up doing at that time was I had to look in a different route for a therapist in terms of my son, because the first issue I kept running into is I previously worked at a lot of these agencies, whether it was volunteering, working, I had some type of connection to the agency. And so the person that I would call or be talking to knew me. And it was like, okay, this is a little uncomfortable, because then I have to, you know, and so that definitely was a barrier. Another barrier that I find with therapists, because of the work that we do, and this is where I tend to be a little more flexible and in terms of boundaries, I set boundaries, but my boundaries look a little different because I'm working with providers, is time. And when I say time is, most of us, this is a 9-to-5. And so if I'm going to meet therapists where they are and know that this is a 9 to 5, sometimes that may mean for me, I have a 7:30 or 8 o'clock session. Because in reality, this population that I'm serving, I know that they're seeing clients from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. themselves. So in order to meet them where they are and help them get their needs met, I have to be a little more flexible and I have to be a little more adaptable. And so the boundaries that we as therapists would typically set for community patients isn't the same boundaries I set for my clients. And that's because, again, I want to make sure I'm meeting them where they are.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that the barrier of finding the time to get therapy as a therapist or to get your services because of the hours that you're working. I'm really glad you mentioned that, because actually that was, I feel like I have a little more flexibility now in my career. But early on when I wasn't in private practice or when I didn't have that, it was really hard to find someone that could do either early morning or late evening. So the fact that it's like almost like you have all of the therapist's needs in mind, and that all the services and the space is kind of catering to that, which is really special, because you said something earlier that therapists are people too. And I think that is something we forget about. And at least I do. Can you tell me more about your philosophy with that?
So I think often what happens is, you know, especially the community, it's hard to forget that the person serving you has a family. It's hard to, you know, because when you go, and as you should, when you go in their space, you're there for your healing. You know, clients come to us to help them through whatever they're going through, to help them kind of navigate life. And so in that time, it's easy to forget that, you know, yes, I'm your therapist, but when I leave out of this room or when I end this session or when my day ends, I have a life, you know, I have a family to go home to, and I'm dealing with some of my own stuff. But, you know, it's hard. And I think even as therapists, there's this, and I don't know what word to use. Let me think. There's this like unspoken, I want to say, shamefulness. There's this unspoken shamefulness that we don't want to talk about when, as therapists, we're dealing with our own issues, because we also convince ourselves, I'm supposed to have this together. I'm supposed to be able to figure this all out, because here I am helping other people navigate their lives and I can't figure out my own life. And that's a lie. And so, you know, one big philosophy that I have, and I always ask all of my clients, new, old, and even I keep reminding, how are you showing up for yourself? That is like my biggest thing. And it's because we forget to show up for ourselves as therapists. We show up for everyone else. We're pouring into everyone else's cup. And we don't realize that we're not showing up for ourselves until it's too late. And at that point, we're burnt out. We're tired. We're exhausted. We're depressed. And we're just ready to tap out. And so Therapists Need Therapy too is about saying, let's not get to that point. Let's not get to the point where showing up for yourself is on the bottom of the list. Let's put that to the top of the list, because if you can't show up for yourself, then I also start having concerns about you showing up for clients.
Absolutely. And can you dive more into what showing up for yourself could look like for a therapist specifically?
So showing up for yourself, it looks different for everyone, but the first thing on that list is taking care of your own mental health, you know, making sure you are mentally sound. And when I say that, no, every day is not going to be a good day. And that's for everyone. But when you start recognizing that more days are bad than they are good, you have to pause. You have to say something's missing here. I have to do something else to deal with what I'm dealing with. And so I recommend that all therapists get a therapist. That is the number one way that you show up for yourself. And not saying you have to go to therapy every week, not saying you have to go to therapy every 2 weeks. I have some clients who just check in once a month, you know, but it's just to have that space where they can go and they can be their authentic self, and they can process with someone all of the things they're going with, going through. And also the other thing is understanding there is a difference between dealing with your own therapy, your own mental health needs in therapy, and sitting in a consultation, talking about other clients and because I think sometimes we get that mixed up too. It's like, well, I go to consultation and that's good and that's perfect. But that's not what I mean when I say showing up for yourself, because when you're in consultation, you should be showing up for the client, you know, and that should not be about you. So, you know, in terms of therapy for yourself, and if you don't want to get therapy, get life coaching, you know, and that's, again, all of that we offer, you know, when people come to me, because of my licensure and all of my expertise, I'm able to say, how is it that I can help you? And sometimes that may not mean necessarily therapy and a diagnosis. Sometimes that just may mean a few check-in sessions just to process some things and kind of help navigate being stuck somewhere in life. And so when I say showing up for yourself, the number one priority is making sure your mental health needs are met. The second priority is doing something that is meaningful to you once every day. I don't care. I tell my clients, I don't care if it's 5 minutes a day. Take 5 minutes a day and do something that is important to you. You know, and some people that 5 minutes is more than 5 minutes, you know, whether it's reading, yoga, taking a walk. If you have some TV that you like to watch that you don't normally get to watch, turn it on, watch your show, you know, not feeling guilty for carving out time for you, you know, because again, it's hard to show up for other. It's easy to show up for other people and it's hard to not show up for yourself. So not feeling guilty for saying, you know what, this is important to me. So even if it's not important to everyone else around me, I'm going to make it a priority. And then the third thing on showing up for yourself is saying no. And again, another one of my big philosophies is no is a complete sentence. And I say that because, again, often helpers want to say yes to everything. We want to show up for everyone. And sometimes that it's not your job to show up for other people. You know, it's not your job to show up for every crisis your family member is having. It's not your job to show up for every single conversation your friend needs that, you know, they need to process something. Sometimes you have to tell other people they need to get their own therapist and they need to figure out their stuff. And that's not your job.
Yeah, I love those three philosophies. And I'm wondering if they were born not only just from your own experience, but also hearing from other mental health professionals in the field as far as what were their barriers to showing up for themselves or what are their resistances? Is that what you've noticed most of the time with the population you work with? Is those are the things that get in the way, trying to do too much or feeling guilty at the end of the day to just do something for themselves? Anything else that comes up?
Shame is another big one that comes up. And that comes up because, again, I think as therapists, we have a hard time realizing that some of us had traumatic childhoods. You know, some of us went through things that we never really dealt with. And the reality of it is a lot of us go into this work because we want to help other people as a result of something that happened to us, kind of like my personal story. You know, I find that most clients that I work with, they became therapists because of something that happened in their childhood or something that was like this moment in their life where they're like, okay, this is my calling. But it stemmed from typically some type of trauma or something happening. And so there's this shame that how dare I have my own trauma that I need to deal with. And here I am trying to, again, help other clients deal with their trauma. And so instead of being honest about that and learning ways to maneuver that, we kind of push it to the bottom and we don't deal with it. And so what happens with, I find with a lot of my clients is they explode or something, some small little incident in their life becomes this big grand thing. And that's because you're talking about years piled on years of this happened to me in my childhood and I didn't deal with it. But what I did do is go start listening to other people tell the similar story about what happened to them. And at some point you're going to get triggered. You know, no matter how good of a therapist you are, you can be the best therapist in the world. If someone comes to you and they come to you and they're talking and what they're coming about is domestic violence and you saw domestic violence challenged as a child. You remember those feelings. At some point, you're going to be triggered by having these conversations with this client, knowing that you've never really dealt with all of the feelings and emotions and the trauma that stem from you witnessing domestic violence. And so a big part of that, a big part of what I try to do is helping them work through that shame. And reminding them again that you are a human being and you don't get to control some of the things that happen to you. It was out of your control. Your childhood, most of us, our childhood is out of our control, you know? And so when you have things that come up from childhood, that shame of blaming yourself is something that I definitely, it's a barrier, but it's also something that most of my therapists show up with.
Yes. And I can definitely see how that plays out in a variety of ways, especially with my own self and work and team. And I've even noticed in my previous experience with therapists that I'm worried about being judged by my therapist about, well, if she can't even handle her own sadness, how is she working with clients? Like, I always wonder if people are judging me of how good of a clinician I am based on my own work. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's common in some of your clients, or maybe it's not, maybe it's just my own thing, but that was always kind of just uncomfortable. If I was to really share what was really going on, I was wondering if people would think, are you fit to do this work? And, will you tell me I am? No, I'm just joking.
Well, no, and I have those conversations with providers and therapists when they come to me. And again, I think I mentioned it earlier, I'm really transparent with therapist because, again, I'm working with people who know this work. And so because of that, one thing I do say, you know, from the beginning is if you're doing this work and your mental health is at the bottom of the priority list, and it's not a judgment thing, it's more of a concern. I'm concerned for you, and I'm concerned in a way that I know this is impacting you. So when, for me, it's not more of a judgment thing, it's more of a genuine concern, because again, at some point you can only take on so much of other people's issues and problems if you're not dealing with your own. Because what tends to happen, I feel like, is you start getting disconnected in those sessions with clients, and you're physically there, but you're not there. And, you know, clients may not pick up on that because we're so good at masking when we do this work. But I, as a therapist, I can pick up on that. I can pick up on, like, okay, based on the conversation you just told me you had with a client, it sounds to me like you were in this room, but you weren't mentally, you weren't there with that client. And so that concerns me, because how much disservice are we doing to our clients by not taking care of ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure that what you're saying, what we're talking about, might be resonating with a lot of our listeners that are mental health professionals, because yeah. And then the fact that you know that, and there's no judgment, but more of concern and care of how do we move from your mental health, you know, how we move through to where you're caring for yourself. And that kind of leads me to wondering, and you only share as much as you feel comfortable, but, you know, noticing you do a lot. You are the CEO of more than one business. You work a lot in the community. I know that you're prolific in the community in Louisville. You teach, you're a wife, you have children, you're active with your family. So how do you show up for yourself and keep your mental health a priority with all that you do?
Well, again, transparency moment, it's been hard lately. It really has. And that's because, as you said in my bio, travel is my self-care. Travel, you know, and you know, people think travel looks like taking a bath or a massage, you know, and it's different for everyone. But I mean, people think self-care, I said travel. People think self-care looks like that. But for me, I mean, 100%, I just have to go and disconnect. And so pre-COVID, I literally went somewhere at least once a month, you know, whether it was a 2-hour road trip, an extravagant trip, you know, another country. But that's how I show up for myself. I go, I disconnect, I recharge, and I come back. And so COVID has really been a challenge for me because, of course, travel is limited. And because of COVID, you know, we have to take extra precautions. So I will say that I am looking forward in about 2 weeks. We had my grandmother celebrating her 70th birthday. And so our plan is to go to Destin fingers crossed, you know, because you got to take it day by day. But I'm looking forward to that because I haven't really been able to show up for myself in the way that I know I need during this time. And so that week is really something that I'm going to dive in. I'm going to take full advantage of, you know, I will be letting my clients know I am unavailable. And giving them some options to if they do need someone. But for me, yes, definitely taking care of myself looks like travel for me. But since I haven't been able to do that, I've been doing other things. I will say COVID has blessed me with more time with my kids and them being home, even though it's driving me crazy some days, you know, the homeschool stuff. But it's given me more time to really do things with them that I probably wouldn't have done before because they were in school. So we've cooked more together, more family time, playing games, and just really, I have two teenagers and a preteen. And so it's taken me time to really, really get to know them in a way that, I probably wouldn't have. So COVID has been a blessing in that. And when I say that it's been important to me and it's been self-care for me because, I mean, some days we just sit around. And the beauty in it is that there's no pressure to have to be anywhere or go anywhere or do anything outside of the house. And so that has been a little refreshing some days. Now, other days I'm like, okay, I'm ready to get out of this house. But that's pretty much how I show up for myself. And I have other little things that I do. I do like to read. I like to take, you know, I work out, try to work out the best I can, try to eat right. And so all of those things impact me taking care of myself. But the top of the list is travel for me.
Oh, yes. And I can see why. So it sounds like there are some things that you're unable to access or some self-care that you're unable to access, but then also new things have arisen or grown out of the kind of quarantine COVID, kids being home all the time that were maybe unexpected, and that it's okay to sometimes know that you're, so what I'm hearing is with your transparency that it's just okay to know that you might not be doing as much as you normally can or do for yourself. And like, do you have a limit or is there like warning signs that you look out for yourself or your clients of like, okay, SOS, like we need to go in stat.
Yes, definitely. For me, and I mean, I think for most therapists is one, when I started this working with therapists, it was because I was starting to feel burnt out. And so I think one signal is when that burnt out feeling is becoming a daily feeling, when you can't shake it, when it's like, you know, and again, we're doing this work, there's going to be some days where you're like, man, is this really what I want to do for the rest of my life? But then, you know, if that feeling is a daily feeling, we've got to check in. We've got to have a conversation. And I tell my therapist, and that applies to myself. When I start feeling like that daily, you know, I check in with my friends. I check in with my husband. I check in with my family. And because sometimes for me, and that's the other thing, sometimes as therapists, your mental health doesn't necessarily require another therapist. It doesn't require an outside person. It just may be picking up the phone and having a conversation with someone, getting out of your comfort zone, getting out of your house and going somewhere different just to give you a refresher, you know? And so for me, sometimes when I do start feeling my signs of, okay, wait a minute, this is becoming too much again, are feeling burnt out more than I would say maybe 3 days out of a week, are isolating. That idea that, okay, I saw my clients today, now I'm going to bed, or I don't want to be bothered, or I don't want to talk to anybody. Or even, and I've had some therapists even do this, even starting to cancel appointments consistently. You know, it's one thing to have a mental health day here and there, but when your mental health days start becoming weeks and months, then again, we have to talk about that, and we have to deal with them. We have to be honest about where you are in your journey right now.
And just to add, I'm curious of what you've seen or noticed, especially the last few months. I know that what I've experienced myself and what some of my colleagues have, I'm hearing a lot of way more reports of being exhausted, tired, worn out. Are you hearing those type of things? And is there anything different that you're doing with your clients based on that?
Yes, definitely. I think this telehealth It was probably cool at the beginning because most of us are used to in person and showing up for people, but now it's starting to become one of those things because there's several different things happening when you have to talk to someone via telehealth. One, a lot of therapists and community-based clients, this social interaction is majority of their interaction with people throughout the day. You know, especially if you're a therapist that's working 20, 30, 40 hours a week, most of your social connection comes from meeting with clients. And so now that here you are, you have to meet with clients on the computer, it takes away some of that social interaction. And sitting, and the thing is, you know, yes, you can get up and move around your house or your office or wherever you are, but there's something about having to get up, go out, that put on clothes, leave the house, and go to where you're going. And so when you have to sit in front of a computer all day, it becomes draining. And it is tiring because it's like click after click after click. And after like the fourth click of getting in one session and getting out another session, you're like, oh my gosh, like it just becomes, and people, I think people underestimate how exhausting it can make you feel because you're in front of a computer. But there's even like other scientific things that go into sitting in front of a computer all day. The rays that it gives off, the signals that it sends to your brain. And, you know, even when it comes to trying to sleep and those things, if you're on a computer all day and your last client is at 8 and you want to get in bed at 9 o'clock, it's probably impossible. Because the thing is, the computer, the light that the computer emits, it sends signals to your brain that you're still awake. And it takes a while to come down from that. And so, you know, again, taking care of ourselves can be kind of difficult because if you've been here all day and, you know, doing this all day and then you're trying to come down from that, you're tired. It's like your body's tired, but your brain's not tired. And I think that's the other disconnect there, is that physically you are exhausted, but because of the way that our chemistry works, your body is still saying, okay, let's go. I got more in me. And you're like laying in bed and 3 hours have passed and you're still wide awake. But in your mind, you're like, as soon as this ends, I'm going to take a shower, I'm going to eat, and I'm going to go to bed. And then here you are, it's midnight and you're up again. And so I think that's another reason why people are tired too, is because COVID has really, this quarantine has really thrown off people's sleep schedules. And it's easy to do that when you're in the house all day, you know, when you're, because at some point it's, you know, at one point we weren't supposed to go outside at all. So when you can't go outside at all and your options are limited, most people resort to eating and sleeping all day, which is another, barrier that I feel like I have, or not barrier, but I feel like that's another thing that has come up a lot with therapists right now, is, you know, overeating, not sleeping enough, or sleeping too much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've heard all of that with our therapists and also even clients, you know, and we're all going through a lot of us are going through similar things. And I think that's also a different experience for a therapist to be right there in it. And I'm really curious if we can kind of transition from the micro to more of the macro aspects of mental health, and kind of starting with, let's go with, what do you think is one of the biggest problems, or a problem, I'm going to pause for a second and I'm going to start over. So in your opinion, what do you think is the biggest problem or group of problems facing the mental health system today?
Okay. Well, that's a good, I can answer that. We could talk about that all day. Let me think about what I feel like are the three biggest problems. I will say one is access. You know, I think that is at the very top of the list, is access to services. And when I say access, I primarily honestly mean for low income and communities of color. And so, and what I mean by that is typically, you know, private insurance, of course, you know, is something that most people have through jobs or employers. But even with private insurance, you know, a lot of those come with co-pays or deductibles. And so if, you know, if I need services and I want to use my insurance, but I still have to pay you $40 out of pocket because that's what my deductible is, I'm likely to say no. And the thing is, a lot of the community health places that do offer free or low cost services, they can't get you in consistently. You may get an appointment now and you may not have another appointment for 3 months. So the services are there, but the access in terms of how often you can go in and really, really, truly getting in, doing some work, are limited. And so, and I've worked in community mental health. And so I've firsthand been able to see how, you know, our clients want the help, they want the services. But when, you know, we don't have enough providers to provide the service, I can only come in once every 2 months, I'm likely not to keep coming in, because I'm really not getting anything I need is really not happening, you know. And then on top of that, when I do get an appointment, it's like 30 minutes. And any good therapist will tell you, the first 10 minutes of a session is spent just kind of checking in. How are you doing? How's things going? How's life? And then you dive into the rest of that. So if I only have 30 minutes to sit in your chair, I'm really not doing any work. And so that's a barrier, and that prevents people from wanting to show up. And then the next one is the stigma of mental health. You know, I think we're getting better with it as a country, as a whole, but we have a long way to go in terms of acknowledging that going to a therapist doesn't make you crazy. Going to a therapist and accessing mental health services doesn't mean that you necessarily have a chemical imbalance or that you need to be on medication. Because I often think we try to connect the two, you know, and sometimes they are connected. Sometimes you do need to go and be to a psychiatrist and be prescribed medication and see a therapist, but you don't always have to do both. They don't always go hand in hand. And so this idea that if I see a therapist, everyone's going to think I'm crazy or everyone's going to think something's wrong with me, you know, and that word crazy, what does that even mean? You know, we say that, and even as therapists, I have clients who they'll start the session and say, I think I'm crazy. I'm just losing my mind, you know? And so we throw that word around a lot, but as a society, you know, we don't really think about the extent of what that word does to people who are really struggling with mental health and who have, you know, who grew up in families or cultures where, if you go talk to a therapist, then something is wrong with you. So that stigma is not only a society stigma. You know, there's a lot of cultures who believe that what happens in this house stays in this house, or you know, we don't go talk to a stranger about what's going on with us, or, you know, you don't need a therapist. You need, and this is a whole nother conversation, but you don't need a therapist. You need God or you need Jesus. And, you know, again, even that religion, whatever you believe in, can go hand in hand with mental health. But because of the stigma, we don't have those conversations. And then I think the third barrier and this one is specifically, I think right now, what I'm about to speak on is specifically towards Black therapists. Right now, being a Black therapist in the state of America right now, it's really difficult. And the barrier is, one, there's a shortage of Black providers. And so, you know, even me, I have had to turn away people for several reasons. One, I may know them, or two, just because of my caseload, you know. And the thing is, right now, Black providers want to connect with other Black providers. And that is a barrier because there's not enough of us to be spread in order to meet the needs of other people. And so I'm in some like Facebook groups, and I'll even say this, not even just for Black providers, for the Black community. There is a, you know, and finding someone who looks like you can be a struggle in a world where we're not the majority.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've kind of discussed that in previous conversations, but it's something really interesting that you mentioned. I'm going to kind of talk about a few things that you mentioned, because you're right, this could be a whole nother podcast. So we'll try to be succinct in this space. Maybe we'll do another one. But you were talking about the stigma, and a colleague had recently sent me, I'm not on social media, that was part of my showing up for myself, but I feel like I'm missing out. So they sent me this post, an advocacy post that someone had done, and it was on the subject of diagnosis. And they were advocating for themselves in their insurance company that they shouldn't have to have a diagnosis, which AKA equals crazy, because of racism or because of historical or family trauma. There's nothing wrong with me that I've experienced these things. So now I have to have the diagnosis of depressed or bipolar or anxious, but really it's the system or the community or the way things of the oppression of being a minority person. And I thought that was brilliant. And I've noticed even as a clinician that I do have struggles with diagnosis, especially because as a social worker, we don't really think the people has a problem. It's their interactions between the person and the environment. So I'm just curious of your thoughts of that. And like, is it possible to advocate beyond this medical model system that probably reduces access?
Well, and I think what you said is a big part of it is that mental health falls into the medical model. And again, in some instances, that's necessary. You know, I've also worked in like inpatient facilities, you know, and so again, we can dive down that hole, but some instances that medical model is necessary. And there are other instances where it's not, and it is a barrier. And I'll even say, like, I have a client who I'm having this exact issue with right now. Literally, it just came up for me yesterday. And it's because, you know, the services are wanted and the services are needed. But a lot of the work that needs to be done is childhood trauma. And so now here I am. And I even told myself I was going to have to do a consultation with someone because I have sat and looked at my DSM. I have it right here in my drawer. I've pulled it out several times. And I'm just like, okay, I have to give this person a diagnosis for insurance purposes. But truly and honestly, there is no, you know, the diagnosis is just dealing with childhood trauma. And yes, there are some depressive symptoms, of course. You know, there are symptoms of anxiety. There are symptoms of depression. There are some PTSD symptoms. But the actual diagnosis isn't any of them because that's not the story. That's not the problem. And so I would definitely agree with whoever posted that, that this idea that everyone billing insurance needs a diagnosis is a barrier in itself because, you know, I've also had clients who are like, well, if I have to bill my insurance, I'd rather just self-pay. Because as most people know, when you self-pay, I don't necessarily have to give you a diagnosis. The diagnosis is more for the insurance purposes. And so I think that's the other issue is here we are, you're paying for insurance, but because it is that important to you, which is it should be, you'd rather pay out of your pocket and potentially not be reimbursed for that instead of having to deal with the diagnosis. And so, you know, that is a barrier for people, whether it's therapists. And I think it's a barrier for everyone, but I see how it can be more of a barrier for therapists because here's the other part of this. There are currently, at least in Kentucky that I know of, there are no safety measures put in place if you are a provider who is seeking their own services, you know? And so hypothetically, and not saying that a job would find out, but things happen in 2020, you just never know with anything. And so I think the other barrier is, you know, if some people feel like, well, if my job finds out I have this bipolar diagnosis and I'm working with clients, they may question my ability to do my job, even though I'm taking care of myself. You know, I think there's some fear there too in other people finding out that you are dealing with your own mental health and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it's a stigma for us who have dedicated our lives in this field, I can't only imagine other, you know, our clients or the public who might be worried and scared for the same things. Like if we can't advocate or do that work, it's almost like, well, of course it's going to spill out into the general population of that, those same stigmas and barriers. And kind of in the same, I guess, vein, we also discussed in a previous conversation, identity and systems in relation to therapy. And you had said, I'm a Black woman first, then a therapist. Can you dive into what that means to you and how it informs your clinical practice?
So what that means to me is, you know, when people see me, they don't They don't know I'm a therapist until I tell them I'm a therapist. And that's just what it is. You know, when I walk into spaces, especially being young. So I think for me, one of the things when it comes to clinical practice that I'm very mindful of all the time, well, not one, two of the things is racism and ageism. And it comes up a lot for me. You know, I have walked into rooms or I have been with clients, and this is before Therapist Need Therapy too, when I was doing some community work. You know, I've been with clients and they assume that I'm the client and not the provider. And so having to navigate this system of being young and being Black, I have to remember that is who I am first. That is who the world sees me as, and that is who I am when I show up in spaces. And so for clinical practice, you know, I often have to remind non-Black providers in terms of interacting with their clients, you know, knowing that when they come to you, their who they are on the outside, their Blackness is the first thing that the world sees. And as their therapist, you may not see that, but understanding that's the world that they're navigating right now. And so, you know, for me in my clinical practice, it's important that one, I'm showing up for myself, like I said earlier, in terms of being honest and being truthful about when I'm struggling being in spaces with people who don't look like me and what that feels like and why I feel like that. It also means being truthful with coworkers and other therapists, even in my sessions, because I'm working with therapists, I try to be very transparent. So it also means sometimes in a professional way, calling some of my clients out. You know, when they're talking to me about some of the things that they're dealing with clients, and I'm like, well, wait a minute now, you know, let's process how you played a role in that, you know, and again, dealing with white privilege, how that shows up, even when you don't want it to, how that shows up as a therapist. So when you're working with communities of color, you know, and so making sure you are aware of your own biases. And on the other side of that, that's another way I show up in my clinical practice is, again, making sure I know my own biases. You know, yes, I am a Black woman, but I know I have some inherent biases that exist, whether it's for people that look like me or don't look like me. And so that, you know, it's all about doing the work. But the third part of that in terms of informing my clinical practice is I feel like it is my job to be intentional about showing up for the Black community, you know, and because of all the barriers we listed earlier, that is how I became to be a co-founder of the nonprofit that I'm a part of, because for us, it's about being intentional and making sure we help people that look like us. And if I can't help you, I'm going to connect you to someone who can.
And so part of, well, there's a lot of things that you discussed there, but part of what I'm hearing is that part of the way you show up for yourself is to also show up for your community and be a voice, because you have the ability, maybe the privilege of doing that in your position of power, I guess we could say, as a professional in the community. And that is actually also for you in a way you show up. As long as you have balance, I'm hearing.
Right.
And then also you talked about the understanding, the internal bias and the work, the how we show up, our identity in sessions and what that means to our clients. And what I've noticed is that I don't think many of our formal educational programs do a good job of this. I mean, in social work, yes, we talk about bias, we talk about this, but I feel like it's very superficial. I don't think it's challenging as a white person, a white woman, a white liberal woman. I don't think it was challenging at all to what white fragility is, what white bodied supremacy looks like, and how intertwined and ingrained the being a descendant of a colonialist is on my body and mind and understanding of the world. And I'm curious if you feel the same about the fact that we aren't really, that the educational system for counselors and mental health professionals, we don't go into this much. And other ones that aren't social work don't go into it at all.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I do think that's a problem. I think And actually, I was just having this conversation with someone. Some of the biggest things I think are wrong with our educational system in terms of this work in this field is exactly what you just described. Not wanting to have those real hard conversations about biases and racism. And even, like I said, ageism, like what that looks like for people. And then the other part is not pushing enough that you really are taking care of your own mental health needs. You know, I genuinely think that that should be a part of any curriculum for a therapist or a counselor or a social worker, where, you know, even if it's just two or three sessions, you have to go sit down with a therapist to begin doing the work. We have to normalize, you know, we have to normalize having those tough conversations about biases, and we have to normalize having those tough conversations about mental health and childhood traumas, even for the people doing this work. And so I definitely think those two things are at the forefront of issues with education in terms of getting to this point to be a therapist or to be a social worker.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we're trying to do here with these conversations, are to bring in what was missing, or what some people didn't get from their formal education, and also what they're not getting from continuing education, because we have our things that we have to do, like ethics and suicide assessment. But yeah. I'm curious of support. I want to support other mental health professionals in this development, exactly what you're talking about. And Erica, to be honest, I'm ready to schedule 5,000 appointments with you and group therapy. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that's thinking that. Can you share more about the services that you're providing right now? And just briefly, how, even if someone's not in the states that you're licensed in, which are Kentucky and Ohio, how they can connect and be a part of what you're doing, maybe even support you, even if it's not by accessing services.
Okay, so right now I'm offering individual therapy, and that's I have openings for that on a weekly basis. Right now it is via telehealth only, and again, licensed in Kentucky and Ohio for therapy. However, I do life coaching for people in other states, you know. And so if people wanted to know the difference between that, one of the big main differences is, of course, the insurance piece of it. And it's more dealing with day-to-day things and not necessarily a diagnosis or trauma related. And so that's open to anyone in any state. In terms of where I can be reached, you can go to my website, which is TNT2LLC.com. And I'm also, again, because I am pretty flexible, I have people reach out to me via text messaging, which I'm fine with that. You know, just state who you are, where you're calling from, or how you got connected with me. And for that, my phone number is 502-414-4380. Soon I will also be starting back up some online group therapy sessions. And like I said, we've done those before. At the beginning of COVID, we did it online, and life just happened for a lot of people. And so we just kind of got, you know, off path a little bit, but I'll be starting that back up. And our hope is that here's at least once this year, we'll be able to do a face-to-face social event, you know, still trying to just take it day by day with that in terms of COVID and everything. And then so the information I gave, my phone number and my website are good for TNT and Forward Solutions. And with Forward Solutions, I am taking, I have more spaces open for clients than I do with TNT. And then also I can be reached at therapists. So therapists with an S, need therapy two, the number two. All one word, therapistneedtherapy2@gmail.com.
All right. And we will be obviously listing all of that in the show notes. So don't worry, listeners, if you don't have your pen and paper available right this moment, but it is important to know how you like to be contacted and reached, and also how people can read more about what you're doing with your, both your business and your nonprofit and supporting that. And as we're winding down, this is something that's become a little bit of a tradition in integrative conversations, because we are geared toward mental health professionals, and we do understand that doing the work and the practice is important, right? Personal and professional development. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious if you'd like to offer maybe any guided practices or a tip or a technique that therapists can do right now, today, the last few minutes of this podcast. So remember how you said it only has to take 5 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. If we could just do a few seconds, what is anything coming to your mind for that?
I think it goes back to what I said earlier, and I often have therapists write a list out of this, how do you show up for yourself? What does that look like in your life? And just take a couple minutes and write that down. And, you know, because what I often find is that some therapists don't have an answer because no one's ever asked them that. And so that is a big assignment that I like to do, especially with new clients, is let's talk about how you show up for yourself. What does that look like? And when I say show up for yourself, I don't mean you saying you go to the grocery store and buy groceries for your whole family. You know, that's fine. And that's good that you all are eating, but that's not showing up for yourself.
Yeah. This is something that's more internal, mm-hmm. like that's just you. Maybe not in relation to your kids or your family or your work or your community, right?
It's not in relation to anybody but you. And Ooh, that's a big part yeah. of it is how do you show up for yourself that's not connected to anyone else?
I can see where that could be challenging for a lot of us in this field, because I was going through and I'm like, wait, not connected? So it's not going to my friend's porch and sitting for a little bit.
Because that's also still meeting her, that friend's need. Because often we forget that in meeting our own needs, sometimes we're meeting someone else's need as well. So when I say, how are you showing up for yourself? I genuinely mean, how do you show up for just you and no one else is involved in that showing up?
Ooh, okay. Well, that's a very good exercise, which I hope all of our listeners can try out when they have a few minutes, maybe after they finish listening, give yourself 5 minutes and just think about that and write it down. And if you didn't find anything, or if you found a few things, what do you do with that?
Well, if you didn't find anything, of course, that's where the work with me starts. And that's where I spend time helping you figure that out, helping you figure out ways to show up for yourself. And then if you did find a few things, start doing them, you know, because be intentional about not making that a bi-weekly thing or a monthly thing. Make it a daily or a weekly thing. And if whatever showing up for yourself is a big thing, figure out a way to minimize it so that you can show up for yourself every day. So if showing up for yourself is getting a massage once a month, you know, and technically, if you want to be technical, that benefits someone else because you're paying for that service. But we'll go with that. So if you're showing up for yourself by doing that, maybe figure out a way to buy like a little foot massage at home and do a foot massage every day. Or just sit and, you know, relax your muscles, rub your hand, get some stuff and work, like do something for yourself. Take whatever it is that's the bigger scale and figure out how to make it something that you can do daily for yourself.
That is a really good, more than a tip, I'd like to say that's a good philosophy or a way of, like, an intentional way of showing up for yourself, because I do hear this often, is that it takes too much time. I don't have time to do mm-hmm. A, B, and C, which I know I love. And you're saying, well, you don't have to do the whole thing. You can do part of it or a flavor of it, something like that. I'm trying to kind of think about mine, whenever I'm making my excuses of why I can't do A, B, and C because I'm too tired, I'm too this, I got to call my, you know.
We're too busy. Right. And that's the other thing is we often feel like we're too busy.
Yeah, I hear that and feel that. And it sounds like that's the intention of showing up for yourself says that you pencil yourself in.
Like, correct. Just like we schedule everything, yeah, schedule yourself.
I love it. Thank you so much, Erica, for spending this time with us today. I know you're busy. I know you have your own practice in life. So thank you so much for sitting down and sharing your wisdom and your thoughts with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. And then just before I go, I do have social media for people to follow me on. Yeah. I forgot about that. On Instagram, it's TNT2LLC. Mm-hmm. And on Facebook, it's Therapists Need Therapy 2, the number 2 again. And then you could also follow the Black Counseling and Consulting Collective nonprofit on Facebook as well.
All right. I will be adding all of that. And anything else before we sign out?
Thank you for having me. If anyone, again, I'm pretty flexible. So if anyone anywhere that sees this, and even if it's just a 5-minute chat, just, you know, if you're a therapist, please don't hesitate to reach out to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation today. We really want to hear from you. Please visit our website, www.academyimh.com. Please share any feedback you have about the podcast, topics you would like to hear more about, or maybe even suggestions for a potential guest. What courses or webinars would be helpful for you? What is important to you as a clinician right now? How can we be a resource for you? Please send us a message. Again, www.academyimh.com. Also, you could totally click like and subscribe if you enjoyed this podcast.